Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, August 4th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the Internet through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice. On the website, whyagain.org, if you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into an effective part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's free. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it out, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to click on it, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process. And if you choose to listen to those repeatedly, they can serve as a tutorial for you to help you get the most out of the tool. And we hope people do that soon and often, primarily because it's been our experience that it improves the quality of people's lives and relationships when they use these tools. And secondarily, it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, testimonials. And if you have any of that to share with us, you can either email us. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. Or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org, whyagain.org. Or you can give us a call if you happen to be available to call us live during the show, 563-999-3581 is our number. And then when you call that number, if you press the number 1 on your phone, it will put the icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. And we really appreciate when people do that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work, The intention with this work is to be of service. That's the reason Michael and Jeannie are spending all the money they spend on it and rearranging their schedule 5 days a week to be here to help, what Michael used to say is, to help make these tools available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet, whether they had any money to pay for it or not. And his guidance over the years has been that that's his purpose in life. That's part of his secondary purpose. And so he's pursuing that with whatever energies he can muster to do that. And you can assist him in that by showing up here on your own or forwarding this information to others that you think might benefit from it. So we're engaging in talking about these tools. We're engaging in reading other things that are similar and have a lot of overlap and presenting those, and we're talking about them or showing videos or audios of this kind of work in our support groups. And one of the reasons for that is that in the very first four-hour audio of Dr. Michael Rice's teachings that I was given by a friend of mine from high school years ago, Michael talked about how when you're faced with learning something new, and something that has depth to it and that is different than anything that you've been exposed to before, Michael said, the more different ways you hear about it from more different perspectives, the quicker you will understand what there is to learn, and the deeper your knowledge will be, the deeper your understanding will be. So in that original talk, he said, so we're going to talk about this work from a psychological perspective, from a hard science physics perspective, from a religious perspective, from a social perspective. And by the time you're done hearing about what all of these different disciplines have to say about this process or the core of a process like this, you'll understand more quickly and at a deeper level. And I've found that to be true myself, and I've taken it to heart, which is why we present stories that Guy Finley might tell, or things we learned from the Way of Mastery, or things that we learned from the teachings of somebody like Dale Allen Hoffman, or the work of Diedrich Wolfsack with his six-step forgiveness process, or Byron Katie's work with her The Work, which is questioning every negative thought we have, because she's observed for herself that she only suffers when she believes her negative thoughts. I had somebody email me this morning asking for some clarification. So here's a person who, when she first got introduced to this work, she hadn't heard of the term holding space for someone. And she says, if you could expand on the meaning of holding space for self and others along with tools, what things can one say in the midst of a conflict to hold space while being mindful about the process of rescuing or enabling, along with some examples? She says that she chanced upon one of Matt Kahn's talks or little classes. I think she said it's on the Sounds True website. And the title of his offering was All for Love, The Transformative Power of Holding Space. And you can find it at mattkahn.org, K-A-H-N, all one word, M-A-T-T-K-A-H-N.org. And what she's listened to so far says there appear to be connections to the work we do here. Well, so if you've never heard a phrase like holding space before, or being the space of love before, again, they're just words. And one of the things we teach in this work is that it is directly observable that the words have no meaning in and of themselves until a human being has information stored in his or her memory banks for that word. And over time, we enrich, expand, or contract the meaning we give to various words, which is, you know, just fundamentally, the word itself has no meaning unless there's a human mind that's attributed meaning to it. So quite literally, every language, all the words that we use, they've been made up by other human beings. And when they're made up by human beings, they attribute certain meanings or sequences of behavior with that word. You know, one of the examples that has stuck with me over the years is there's an auditorium full of people, and it's, you know, one of those tiered auditoriums so that the chairs are stacked in an escalating, rising way, going away, up. And so as you look down at the podium on the stage, there's a lecturer giving a lecture, and all of a sudden, from stage left, a person runs out and starts yelling excitedly in a language, let's say this is happening here in America, in Russian. And there's nobody in the auditorium that understands Russian. But the person is gesturing wildly and getting more and more agitated until she runs off and then drags back a person who is her translator and keeps saying the same thing. And the translator says, "There's a fire in the building." Instantly, everybody leaves. But the person was saying words that to her meant there's a fire in the building, but the people in the audience had no content in their brain, no meaning in their brain for the words she was saying. They certainly had meaning in their brain for the event of fire burning the building. But the words have no meaning. The content of the brain, memory, life experience of the person who hears the word or receives the vibration of the word, that's what carries the meaning. You know, sometimes people come from families where there's a lot of good-natured joking and teasing, and it's very loving and respectful, and so when somebody laughs around one of those people who comes from a family where there's a lot of love and good-natured laughter, and then the response of the person who hears the laughter when they come from a very loving, good-natured family is they feel lighthearted. They enjoy the laughter. And there are other families where they're very edgy, they're very angry, they're very sarcastic, they're very cutting, and the laughter is always laughing at someone. It's always an insult. It's always, you know, if somebody takes a fall, then they're laughed at and ridiculed. So when that person hears laughter, they get tight and tense and defensive. So the laughter doesn't carry the meaning. The laughter is just a vibration of sound that resonates the meaning that's already in the mind of the person who hears that vibration. So, what does it mean to hold space for somebody? It means different things for different people. What does it mean to hold the space of love for somebody? It means different things to different people. As they have been introduced to it over time, by, you know, the layers of meaning are loaded in from the content of the word and the words that are said around it, and also the emotional attachment, strong positive, neutral, or strong negative, that the individual has for the person who's trying to tell them what it means. So I've had a number of people in my life who are, they're very liberal in their thought process, and they're very open to energy work and things that aren't able to be measured so clearly by scientific instruments. But they might, you know, have a lovely emotional experience, and they like the kinds of people that go to those events where they're doing love exchanges or they're doing sending energy healing work. But I've also had a lot of people who just, they turn up their noses at that. And they say, oh, there's nothing to this. This is quackery. And if it's not hard science provable with some kind of a device that I can measure it on, then it doesn't really exist. And so if somebody from either of those two schools comes to me and starts telling me about holding the space for somebody, and it's not based in what our scientific instruments can measure, it's about intention or about emotions, or then the one person's going to receive it far more willingly and with a positive set of tunings and flavors to it, and the other person is going to receive it very judgmentally and negatively, or push it away altogether, or write it off as worse than useless, right? Harmful, because it distracts people from the real science and what's really going on. So what makes the most sense to me is people like Pierre Pradervan, when he talks about going into yourself, turning the focus of your attention into your heart space, into the space within you, wherever it's located, where you feel emotions strongly. And hopefully you'll tune into feeling positive emotions strongly. And the way you do that is you bring up memories. You bring up thoughts that are specifically tied to certain memories that had a positive emotional feeling to them. And you practice strengthening that energy, that emotional energy state within you, by concentrating on the thoughts part of or associated with the memories of the physical, visceral experience of this loving, safe, calm, happy, joyful. These are various words that just have different meanings for people too. But those kinds of things, those kinds of energy vibrations. And so he talks about blessing and doing a blessing from that space, going within yourself and generating that loving energy feeling within your energy field, within the body that we call the energy field that we call the body. And generating that loving energy, and then holding an image of the person, regardless of what kind of behavior they're exhibiting, holding an image of them in their highest and best, and sending the energy of that image, visualizing them in their highest and best, sending it through that loving energy, the deepest, most viscerally felt, loving, safe, positive energy you can. That is a really good example of holding space for somebody. So for me, over the years, as I've worked with this, it makes a lot of sense for me to say, I'm holding space, holding the space of love for someone or holding space for them when I refuse to buy into any negativity that they may be demonstrating or blaming me of, and I visualize and feel as loving, as calm, as safe, as joyful energy as I can within me, and I project that into my image of this person. Whether you want to call it sending them a blessing of that or holding the space for that, or whether you want to call it this ancient Aramaic process of humility, which is defined as the ability to see the highest and best in another person and then choose to cooperate only with that. Yes, they might be raging at somebody. Yes, they might be crying and overwhelmed with depression. Yes, they might be running around in an anxiety or panic attack. And yet, within that person, there is the potential to be so much more. There is the potential to be the extension of the energy of creation in form. There is the potential to be loving and respectful and patient and kind. And so holding the space for that person, one way to talk about holding the space for that person is for me to identify the highest and best in them and then just send my mental, emotional energy out toward them from that highest and best place, because the highest and best place in me is the same as the highest and best place in them, and send loving thoughts and energies to them from that space of energy, of vibration, of emotion. So that's one way to think about holding space for someone. It weaves into the ancient Aramaic definition for humility. It dovetails very nicely with things that Guy Finley talks about and Matt Kahn talks about. And it's really something that over the years I've had to work a lot at, because it's not something I was trained to do. It's not something my culture holds out as a priority. It's not something that rarely in groups, whether it was classes or individual group meetings, was I encouraged to do that with and for other people. And so it's a practice of where I focus my mind energy and a practice of alertness and sensitivity to what I'm focusing that mind energy on, because as we talk about so often in this work, what I focus my thought energy on amplifies whatever I'm focusing it on. Mike Dooley says, thoughts become things, so choose the good ones. The Way of Mastery says, you don't experience anything that you haven't chosen. You experience only the effects of your choice. So choose to focus on loving thoughts. You start to have the experience of the energy fields shifting in you towards loving, towards peaceful, calm, gentle, towards appreciation, towards gratitude. Now, the email asks, so, you know, are there examples? Are there tools for doing that? Well, I suppose that the tools, if someone was to ask me, what tools can I use for this, the primary tool is the choice of where I focus my thought. The primary tool is my willingness. The primary tool is vigilance. The primary tool is my choice, and I don't have to buy into the image somebody else is holding for themselves or me. So someone can come at me and say that I am rude and I'm angry and I'm impatient and I don't have to buy into that. Someone can come at me and demonstrate the behaviors that I think are in alignment with being rude and being impatient and being angry and being hurtful. But I don't have to buy into that that's their true essence. I can understand that anybody who's putting out those behaviors that would be in alignment with these negative emotional states or judgments that I've been conditioned to make, that that's not their true nature. I can choose to focus on a higher, more integrated nature for consciousness and understand that every human being has consciousness. And I can choose to pour my mental, emotional energy into cooperating with the highest and best in the other person. You know, one of the things we talk about extensively in my work in the private practice and in the support groups is that whatever comes out of somebody's mouth is about them, not about the people around them or the world around them. And it's not possible for me to be in peace, in contentment, in gratitude, in appreciation, in affection, in a state of patience and comfort, and then have angry, hurtful, insulting words come out of my mouth. It's not possible because they're not in me. If I'm sitting here feeling gratitude and appreciation and comfort and patience and respect, then that's all that can come out of me. So anytime I hear or see a raised tone, a tightness, a tension, a yelling, a swearing, a name-calling, an insult come out of a person, I can instantly know that there's pain, fear, or sadness in that person. And it is such that they either choose not to deal with it within themselves or they don't have the capacity to deal with it within themselves. One of the ways the Way of Mastery talked about it to us in an earlier lesson was, I can choose to understand that anybody who does me wrong, steals my stereo, breaks into my apartment, steals something, calls me a bad name or whatever, is another being of brilliance and light, another soul on the journey with me, and they simply haven't yet discovered, or they've temporarily forgotten, their ability to get whatever they need out of life without hurting anybody else. And if I understand that, if I breathe into it, if I observe directly what is directly observable, then I instantly change the energy that I am offering the moment and them in the moment and the situation. If I understand that if I go to judgment, if I go to a negative emotion, if I go to anger or fear or sadness in relation to another person, I'm feeling those things. And it's not caused by anything outside of me. We're just reading about this in Lesson 17. 100% responsibility for every emotion I experience. In Lesson 3, where Way of Mastery is talking about the word of forgiveness. And the word of forgiveness defined in Lesson 3 as Forgiveness means to choose to release another from the perceptions you have been projecting upon them. It is, therefore, an act of dismantling one's false projections. Now, I'm paraphrasing it a bit because I'm just distilling out the essence of this teaching. So every time I choose to see somebody as bad or wrong, I could choose instead the insane way of looking at them according to the world and looking upon that person as one who's just done an act as a brother or sister who is crying out for help and healing. What if I chose to look upon them as one who does not know how to live in this world without being of the world, one who does not know the way to dismantle their false perceptions, the way to self-forgiveness, one who does not know the truth of the light that lives within them, one who does not recognize their great power to create whatever they want in a way that's not hurtful to anyone else. If I chose to look upon them with compassion rather than reactivity, that is that's a wonderful definition of holding space. I choose to see them as being just like me. Holding space, another way to talk about holding space is one of my favorite definitions for the word namaste. And I read this in one of the Ram Dass books back in the 70s. And he says, namaste, I honor the light within you. I honor the place in you of light and peace and love. I honor that place in you where when you go to that place in you and I go to that place in me, there's only one of us. Namaste. So if I hold on to that recognition that we are all sparks of the same light of consciousness and we're all traveling around in this energy field within energy fields within energy fields, and none of us knows at an intellectual level much of anything compared to all that's going on in each and every moment. That's another good definition for me of holding the space of love or holding space for someone. Another way I talk about it is to say the only significant difference between me or and you or anybody who's ever lived is the degree to which we're able to live in the realization that we are all the same. And for those who know the word koan, that's a koan. How can the only difference be that we're all the same? The only difference between you and anybody who's ever lived is the degree to which you and or those people around you are able to live in the realization that we are all the same. That's another definition of holding the space for someone, holding the space of love, seeing that all there is creation, which is another word for love. All there is the energy that's giving rise to consciousness, that's giving rise to everything physical, that's giving rise to every thought and every emotion and every physical sensation you have. It's all part of the flow of life. And being able to be aware of that in the moment, rather than being distracted by, well, there's a pain in my toe, or I keep having thoughts about how bad this divorce is going to be, or I keep having thoughts about how little money there is in my checking account, or I keep having thoughts about what I heard this person say the other day about psychologists being idiots, and I'm chewing on it like a dog with a bone angrily. Rather than focusing on any minute aspect of life or my experience of life, if I step back and breathe and soften and open myself to questioning, how might I be a part of the flow of life in this moment in a way that leads to compassion, gratitude, appreciation, patience, healing, strength, connection, awareness? How might I, how might I be a blessing for myself and others? That's another mechanical way to keep my thoughts focused on holding the space of love, holding space for someone. I can repeatedly ask, what's mine to do here to bless myself and others? What's going on here that is on the periphery of my senses that I might tune into that would allow me to be more respectful, more patient, more compassionate? All of these things, I would say, are things that are in the folder in my mind labeled holding space or holding the space of love for someone or sending someone a blessing. So this is all from an email that I received asking for clarifying, you know, my thoughts about the phrase and the meaning holding space for self and others and what are tools and what are examples. And one of the most powerful examples was I had a gentleman in my office and he's a very concrete thinking person. He was a mechanical engineer, and he worked on boiler systems and electrical and water systems in a building complex, you know, jack of all trades kind of things. He was he had been a Marine when he was younger, so he had a lot of physical training. He was very strong physically, a very, very opinionated individual, a very strong presence. And he'd had a situation in his family where their emotions would run high and people would get angry. But there was also a lot of affection for each other. There was a lot of I would do anything for my family kind of energy in this family. And yet he had this daughter in her 20s who was having some rage issues. And one night there was a rage event, and he described it as he gets up very early for work, you know, 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and so he went to bed at 9 o'clock, and he was sound asleep, and all of a sudden there's this raging 20-something at his door, beating on his bedroom door, and he knows enough to lock his door when he goes to sleep at night because this kind of thing can happen. Well, this particular night, she wouldn't go away, and he kept saying, "We'll deal with it in the morning, whatever," and she was something in the kitchen she couldn't find. And so he gets out of bed, angrily throws the door open, pushes past her, goes into the kitchen, finds the thing that she said she couldn't find, throws it on the counter, and says, "There." Now, unbeknownst to him, she was charging after him because she didn't like that he had pushed her out of the way to get out of his bedroom. And so they go tumbling into the pantry, and somebody gets bruised and somebody gets scratched, and then she decides to call the police. Now, he, as the father, understands that his daughter has these emotional issues and says, you know, she would never do well if she got arrested and it would just escalate things and she'd fall apart mentally. So he takes the fall for her and he goes to jail. And then he, you know, comes to therapy to say, okay, I need to change something because clearly things aren't going well in the house. And I talked to him about a lot of stuff that we've just talked about in this last 40 minutes about how everything that comes out of my mouth is about me. And if there's anger or fear or sadness coming out of my mouth, any kind of insult or yelling or swearing or name-calling coming out of my mouth, it means there's pain, fear, or sadness inside of me. And we started talking about breathing and focusing inside and asking how am I creating this emotion at talked about these things, and I said, now, do you understand how if you were doing these things, you know, the next time this kind of situation comes up with your daughter, it would be different. He looked at me like I had three heads, right, because it's maybe our second session. And so I said, well, imagine it this way. Imagine that you're in the bed sleeping, and you're awakened because there's loud noises out in the hallway just outside your door, and you shout from your bed, I'm trying to sleep here, please be quiet, and there's more ruckus outside, and so you go and you throw open the door and you find your daughter writhing on the floor in pain, and the swearing and the crying out is because she's in pain. Would you yell at her to shut up because you have to go to sleep? Because you have to work in the morning? And he almost launched out of his chair at me. I love my daughter. And his fists were clenched like he's ready to punch me for even insinuating that he might ignore his daughter's pain. And so I said, okay, I get that about you, that you do love your daughter. Now, imagine this. Imagine that you're lying in bed and she's yelling at you, but you've had this input that if she's yelling and swearing and name-calling, it means there's pain, fear, or sadness in her. And so instead of being angry that she's waking you up, you open the door and say, honey, honey, what's the matter? How can I help you? When she's yelling at you and swearing at you, because if she's yelling and swearing at you, it means she is in pain. It's just not the kind of physical pain that we had in the previous example where she's rolling around on the floor. It's mental, emotional, very real pain that people are feeling when they're expressing anger and swearing and name-calling. And for any of us who are trained to pay attention to that, especially for those of us who are dealing with people that we have great affection for and or feel responsible for, it becomes much, much easier to shift the lens, right, to see the highest and best in them, to see them as being exactly like me and probably in pain or fear or confusion or sadness. And then it changes my energetic experience and it easily changes what I say and do, gives it an entirely different flavor. And if you think about this as here's the stew. The interaction between me and another person is like a stew. It's got all these various ingredients in it. It's not just two ships passing in the night. We exchange volumes of information with each other all the time before we ever open our mouths. There are energetic impressions. There are energy fields. There are vibrations. There are histories and intention. There's the resonance of my pain or the resonance of my joy that radiates out from me and interacts with the energy fields of the other people around me. This is very real. And so I can shift what I'm adding to that stew when I step back and realize, oh, there's a tightness or a tension in me. That means I must have a pain or a fear or a sadness in me that I'm not aware of. Let me ask, how am I creating that? Rather than blaming it on the people or things outside of me, even if that someone is standing right in front of me yelling at me. And I focus on the energies that I'm experiencing, therefore the ones I'm creating, they're the same thing, and I shift them to a more calm, respectful, cherishing or gratitude-based energy, appreciation-based energy, and then I speak or act or send emotional energy to the other person from that space. That's all part of, in my mind, the meaning behind the phrase holding space for someone. or holding the space of love for someone, or namaste, or understanding that we're all beings of brilliance and light. Every one of us is a being of brilliance and light, and we're either acting from the direct awareness of that being, or we've temporarily forgotten or yet to discover our true nature. So, I thank you, author of this email, for sparking that monologue, and we've got about 15 minutes left, so I will throw it open for comments or questions. 563-999-3581. What does it mean to you? Have you been exposed to the phrase holding the space of love, holding space for someone? Do you have a different meaning for it? Are there tools, specific tools you use? I meant to add earlier that I will frequently add knowledge of the acupuncture meridians and finger rubbing or wrist rubbing or squeezing to stimulate my energy flow so that I don't build up energy related to negative thoughts and the emotions they generate. So I'm thinking in terms of letting this energy flow through me, and the EFT tapping or the shortcut of finger rubbing and breath work, you know, doing the breathing that has me extend my exhale for 10 seconds or more, that sends that irrefutable message to my physical body that I'm not in danger. I don't need to respond with adrenaline and rapid heart rate and increased blood pressure and increased rapid shallow respiration to oxygenate the blood to get ready for a fight or to get ready to run. So those are other things I would add as tools, the breath and the rubbing the ends of my fingers or the massaging my fingers and or gently squeezing the wrist pulse points as tools that help me move into that space of calm and generate those more respectful, gratitude-based, appreciation-based positive energies and thoughts, and then extend them to the other person. So 563-999-3581, what are your thoughts about holding the space of love for someone, being the space of love for someone? Area code 610, is this Susan?
Yeah, it's a very good email and a very good talk. My son came up the other day to help me keep that kind of loving space with our grandson Jacob before he finally was sent away to a rehab place. And either we didn't do it well enough or something. We were gentle with him and saying things like, you know, you are under great stress now. This must be very hard. And he was so, there was really nothing we could say that would be perceived by him as holding a loving space. He would yell at us like, we're manipulating him. We're trying to control him. The background on him is that he tends to trust strangers more than family members, which is what his father did. His father had a tremendous charm and he was very bright and he could attract people. But once they were on an inner circle, a very inner circle, like his wife, suddenly he didn't trust anymore, and a different side of his personality. It was really like two people. And his son, two oldest sons, seem to have taken this on, but the middle one, the second to the oldest, we're afraid that maybe he just can't. Hang on one sec. Tim, can you handle that?
Yeah.
Okay. We ended up having
You're afraid
to call
that
the
maybe
police.
He can't what? You
he
were
can't,
saying you're afraid that he can't what?
He can't get well. I know that's a very negative thought. And I'm hoping that the rehab people, who are strangers, he may be listening to them. But I'm afraid that when he comes back, we will be the inner circle bad guys who have nothing but bad motives toward him. And I'm telling you about some fears that may not even be real, but we ended up having to call the police because he got so belligerent. He was trying to beat down the door, and we were afraid to have him in the house overnight. We thought he might hurt us, and we never got ugly with him at all. But we had to do these things, and I know you would say that's fine. You have to do that sometimes. But holding the space of love is the only and best way even to approach something like this. But sometimes it's just, it doesn't seem to have an immediate good effect. And perhaps we weren't holding it purely enough. I felt attacked, and I was having to do breathing, and I kept pretty quiet. My son took over. He was very gentle. But then Jacob began attacking him and saying that he was an abuser and he had evil plans for him. And we have nothing but ill will toward him. And it was really an experience with a very mentally ill, I hope it's temporary, person. So anyway, I'm just adding that even though everything you said, I will continue to do, but sometimes it's really hard. And it doesn't have obvious good outcomes.
Well, that's the, I'm glad you went back to that. It doesn't have obvious good outcomes. And I'm put to mind of those world-class philosophers, the Rolling Stones, and they wrote how you can't always get what you want, but you try sometimes,
right.
You just might find you get what you need. Well, so it didn't work out the way your mind told you it should work out. And yet, you don't know. It might have been the perfect thing, right? It might have been the perfect thing to call the police, to have them get involved. It might be the perfect thing that your grandson needs to move to the next level of healing for him. We don't know these things.
Yeah.
And so rather than being in the space of saying, because I didn't get what I wanted in the moment, because I wanted this person to resonate with the love I was sending and just make it be a love fest right then and there and dramatically change their behavior. Because that didn't happen, I say it didn't work. I have really, really confined and constricted this expansive moment of the flow of creation down to a few tiny bits that my mind can understand. But the flow of creation, it doesn't get confined. We just cause pain and contraction and fear and upset within ourselves because we try to make it conform.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, imagine standing in the middle of the Mississippi River and thinking you're going to say a few words and it's going to reverse course. It doesn't work that way. It's okay that it doesn't work that way. There's this flow of life going on. There's this history that your grandson has had with his dad and his mom and all the various people that he's interacted with through his whole life. All of that was coming together in this moment, and you're not responsible for any of that. You're just responsible for what you do with it. And if you stand there and stay loving and stay calm and stay gentle and respectful. And at times, calling the police is the most respectful thing to do. It's a way to try and keep people safe. It's a way to try and keep them from doing damage to themselves and others. And so I'm not saying this, it's all got to be a love fest where we just sit around with flowers in our hair, right? The Cowsills song, flowers in our hair, you know, flowers everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying your responsibility in that moment is related to what you feel, think, say, and do, how you're using your mind energy. And if you stayed gentle and respectful, and you held limits that excluded continual abuse to you and others, that's one of the most loving things you can do. And then when you look at that and you say, I did this and it didn't work, you've got this myopic view, this tiny slice. How do you know it didn't work? It didn't work. I didn't get the exact result I wanted, but there's a result.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. the other thing we said in a call a few weeks ago where you said, and you know, all I could do was this, as though it was some little thing, right? Sending loving energy, sending blessings to people is a massively powerful thing to do. It's not this tiny little thing. It's not like, oh, there's nothing I could do but this. Yeah, that's a lot. That is one of the most beneficial things anyone can do for anyone, themselves or anyone else. Go into the source energy, which is one of the ways you tap into it is with your mind energy, your conscious logical thought process. Shift it over to something loving, respectful, strengthen it, pour the force of your will into it, and gently, respectfully extend that to yourself and others. That is one of the most powerful things you will ever do.
Mm.
And just because the unfolding of events doesn't map out according to the way you would like it to, it doesn't mean it didn't work or something went wrong. You know, I'm telling you this from you know, direct life experience. I've had, you know, people in my family. I've had a cousin who was, you know, decidedly younger than me, so much younger that growing up he would call me Uncle Tim, but we were technically just first cousins. And he ended up getting into legal problems that ended him in jail and then eventually prison.
Mm.
And, you know, if you met him today, you wouldn't say to yourself, oh, my God, this is such a loser, right? He has his own business. He makes lots of money. He has an incredibly driven work ethic. Some would say he's a workaholic, but, you know, what does he do? He does nice things for friends and family on a regular basis. He goes out of his way to maintain family connections. How do we know that, you know, if he hadn't ended up getting in trouble and going to prison, that he'd be anywhere near as nice today as he is? We don't know that.
Mm.
My own son decided to say he didn't have to follow any rules and ended up having jail time at one time. We've talked about that. And today, you'd be hard-pressed to find a more respectful, fun, intelligent, caring person than my son.
Wonderful.
Does that mean he had to have that to get there? I don't know, but I do know that that event, those series of events, didn't ruin his life. And I could have created a lot more consternation and upset and or been motivated to do things that weren't very good for me or anybody else if I'd gone into the deep, dark, oh, woe is me, I can't believe he's doing this, I was a horrible father, everything's lost. If I'd gone into those thoughts, it would not have helped anything. I can tell you that for sure.
Mm.
So choose the loving thoughts. Choose to see everybody as being on their own path. Choose to understand the power of holding the space or being loving for someone, sending that loving energy out, regardless of what they throw back to you, and watch what happens. We ask people, don't trust this. Don't just believe this. Be in the observing state. Be in the questioning state. See if it works as well for you as it has for so many of these teachers of the great spiritual truths. and then you're living in the moment, you're living from direct observation, and you don't need to be validated from the outside.
Good.
All right. Well, you've helped us use our last few minutes here. I thank you for the call and raising your hand, and I'll mute you so you can listen to the second hour. Many blessings, Susan, and I think it's Anne who has her hand up. We haven't gotten to you yet, but Jeannie will turn it, that your microphone on as appropriate. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are the energy of creation expressing in form that some would call love. Everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I appreciate you.
You're very welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Thursday, August the 4th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment to dial in. I've been working with Susan Giles in Florida. She's helping me. She's revamping the shop on the website, and that's looking really good. You all can't see it yet because I can go in through the back door, and we're making some adjustments. So that should be live here in a few days. And I just invite you to, if you haven't downloaded the app yet, to download it or update it on your phone. And it's got a couple different worksheets. It has the Drag On Klingon game for kids. And it has the commitments, link to events, and to more information. There's just lots and lots of information. And you can ask a question from any page on the app, and then we will respond back to you. We will answer it on the radio show and let you know what day and time we addressed your question. So we invite you to do that. Michael, I'll welcome you to the show, and we've got two hands up.
Awesome. Well, let's go for the hands.
All right. The first one is
let's say hello.
760. You're on the air.
Hey, actually, I put my hand up at the same time Susan did, but as God would have it, she needed to be ahead of me anyway to talk to Dr. Tim and then get his response on what was going on with her feelings and stuff. but I'll ask this. My fever is 24 hours, the same normal. So we can't get a hold of the ivermectin, so I'm going to do the hydroxychloroquine because the stamina is not there and the cough is still hanging on, but I'm feeling much better. But what I wanted to ask was what Dr. Tim was talking about, that relates to this friend that I, as it were, you know, I start to say this in my thoughts, and now I started to say it out loud and go, okay, I'm choosing to say it different. I'm practicing learning to saying things differently because there would be a don't in there, is that all of this happened with me. It was divine appointment. So because it pushed me, you know, to do the sinus rinse for one thing that I've been putting off for a whole year probably. And to look at things differently about taking care of myself. Okay to take care of somebody else, but then you have to take care of yourself while you're taking care of somebody else. So this friend with beginning dementia and stuff, I'm just saying that it's got all this medical, you know, saying mild, blah, 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 with the gray matter, blah, blah, blah. But I started looking at the grateful things, and the grateful thing is that the granddaughter finally got there, you know, on Monday, and it's been, and that the granddaughters are working together better. So that's another great outcome, you know. since I'm, you know, done with what I'm doing right now. And it was like, it was almost like, okay, you get this rest because this is what happens. And since you're not doing it yourself, guess what? I'll help you a little bit. So I'm seeing it as, you know, was supposed to happen. The question I have, and I don't know, Michael, if you can answer this, it has to do with all this brain stuff, but I know you have some knowledge.
I'll do my best.
Okay. When, like, part of the stuff that we're learning from the Way of Mastery, which, well, it's, you know, think of things differently. So the 6 days out of the seven that I was over there on a regular basis, not spending the whole day because I didn't have a whole day, was cleaning up poop from this dog because she wasn't cleaning it up. And what it turns out that I found out the rest of the story, I had a suspicion she was feeding it human food. Because when I used to, you know, a couple of weeks ago when I helped out or other times, when I took the dog out to go to the bathroom, it was solid. Well, this was not happening, you know, and so she was doing, and she was doing this in the middle of the morning or sometime. And my friend wasn't getting up to let her out on the porch. You've got puppy pads out there, you know, because she's in a trailer. Anyway, it wasn't happening. So in the morning, there'd be poop in a couple of different places there. So I blocked off the bedroom, finally, so that she couldn't go in
probably,
there.
We probably
but
don't need
started,
all the, we probably
okay,
don't need all
okay,
the poop
sorry,
details. We can go to the bottom line
okay.
of the question, maybe.
Okay, so the bottom line is when I was trying to reason with her why we were going to be giving the dog away, because their granddaughters had already presented that fact, okay, or that they, that needed to happen. And then once the granddaughter now is there with her, definitely she has a toddler, you know, and it can't continue to happen. When I presented that to my friend, there was no reasoning. I mean, like, She didn't get that this can't continue. And so then the other day when she called me, which I'm not sure she meant to, but she did, and she has issues with the phone knowing about, I explained to her because she's, oh, everybody hates the dog. Everybody's against me, you know, with the dog. And I brought up the whole stuff that the dog was doing. And she said, well, you could have just left it. And I said, Nancy, why would I do that? I love you. I says, I would definitely not leave that there. What's happening in their brain where they're not getting the connection?
Yeah. So if you've ever watched somebody in an argument and they're under high levels of stress, they have many goals that are not being achieved, there's no reasoning.
Yeah.
I mean, most people don't reason in the first place. Most people, it's just resonance. It's whatever is firing in brain cells is their answer. But then, remember, when you go to higher levels of stress, become ultra-stressed, now you kick in the power person dynamic. And in most cases, you know, we're going back to a childhood interaction with a person who had significantly more power over their lives than they did. And if that person was an abusive type power person, then there was no reasoning with the power person. There was just, my word is it, and everything the mind, remember, when you have a goal, the mind's purpose is to show you how to fulfill the goal. So in most cases where a power person is trying to run a child, the only answer is what the power person has. And, of course, the child hates it when the power person relentlessly, this is the only answer. But then 50, 70, 90 years later, under high levels of stress, that person will do what their power person did to them that they hated the most. And this is the only answer, the only answer. They'll just replicate that. And there's no reasoning with that. It's just, you know, until you can get somebody to start to cancel some goals and make space. Remember, that's just a little tiny. That Harvard research, it says that in that time frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, we've got room for 9 bits of data. If that thing is filled with, this is the only answer, this is what my power person did to me repeatedly, then there's no reasoning until they can step back and choose to honor truth and start to let go of some of those goals.
Well, okay, so then in this dementia state, which is on and off, at one point before the granddaughter came, she made a statement to me, and then when I talked to her the last time, though, she denied it, was that, you know, I decided it's selfish to not let the dog go because she can't pick her up anymore either, and she's only 12 pounds, so she wasn't being able to pick her up and put her up on the bed, although sometimes the dog would get up there, that's fine. But so she was using always that as an example. Well, you know, she's here with me right now. Well, okay. You know, again, like you said, they pull out anything they can to reason back why this should not happen.
Yeah.
But
I want this goal fulfilled, and that's it.
Okay. So, but at one point then, so what is the brain like in and out of reasoning? Because that whole sentence, it was beautiful. I said, and I supported her on that. I said, oh, that's great that you see that, you know, that it was a selfish. I didn't come up with the word selfish, so I was quite surprised when she said that. But then now we're back to. So is there skips in the what's going on?
You know, what goals are, you know, you can, if you find a mind that is, you know, just one, there's only one channel possible, it's because there's only one goal being held. However, if that goal will change, you know, someone who's on that one track, and then you say, well, gee, you know, we really need to think about your health because we don't need this mess in the house, then their mind shifts into, oh, I have another goal. I need to think about my health. Oh, yeah. Well, now I can go back to different data. But if something triggers that goal of, I want my dog and that's it, and I have a power person task that, you know, the power person, there's only one answer, and that's the answer that the power person has, the tendency will be that's what they're going to stick to. That's why oftentimes distraction will work. You know, Susan has shared with us in her interaction with her grandson that oftentimes, you know, he's on a roll with something, on a negative event, and she can just mention something different, triggers a different set of goals, and all of a sudden that old mindset is just disappeared. And so I think quite likely that's what you'd be seeing happening.
Yeah, and that was true. When I was there in person, over the phone, it doesn't work as well because she can hang up like she did the other day. When she called back, that I think she accidentally, the phone is usually on her bed, so it's a couch that's pulled out in the living room. Anyway, she accidentally called because I said, when she answered, I says, well, hello. And I said, did you just call? She said, no. Anyway, she was watching the old Western things or anything. So that's what we talked about. Because, and you know what? Yeah, it was fine. Great conversation, right? But I knew that would help. But what I'm getting is I know about her past with her first husband, and there was abuse, sexual abuse and other abuses. And when I think about each of us coming, like you said, inundating her with, no, this is what needs to happen, that he was the power person over her. And yeah. So he kept saying, right? And what was her defense? Because of course she didn't know about all this. And now we're doing the same thing in a sense, I think. She's thinking that. And so it's like, no, she knows to stand up for herself, right? Is that, am I
and there
up
might
on
be,
that?
There might be room to help to create a quiet space, letting go of goals, maybe even, guide her into a meditation where you offer her thoughts that there is not normally room for because she's busy with other goals, but getting into a quiet space and offering her some other supportive type thoughts that are hard for her to think on her own, especially, you know, the whole power person dynamic is just exacerbated by dementia. You know, that's just creates a whole other level of difficulty in breaking through. But some quiet time, you know, maybe making part of your time with her, just, you know, getting quiet and centering and thinking about her well-being and her state of love, who she is, might be helpful in bringing her into a more cooperative state.
Right. Well, her granddaughter is there now, and I need to get through the rest of the COVID symptoms before I go back over there and help, because I do want to share with the girls so that when they go to the doctor's appointment, you know, with her, that they're aware of what I've observed and help them say, hey, have you been observing this? And this is where, you know, just share my observations with them. But, yeah, because she is a believer, and so I know I can bring up, you know, stuff back in the Bible and just things that have to do with that, because she loves, you know, the music, the worship music, songs and stuff like that. So I think
right.
that's kind of like what happened. Go ahead.
You know, does she have an actual medical diagnosis, dementia, Alzheimer's? What is her diagnosis?
Yeah, I don't have the report in front of me, but they did an MRI. Because what happened was when she went into the doctor's office, this has been, 2 months ago now, the doctor prescribed it because she failed the doctor's office gives a test, I guess, for Alzheimer's, and she didn't pass it. So that's why she was referred to get an MRI.
Okay.
And so the MRI report is there, and that's the one I says it's the medical lingo. And when I went to the doctor with her, you know, she said something about the gray matter, but it's the word that I get in the summary from the report when I read it again recently was before I, you know, started my stuff, was mild, blah, blah, blah. So it's like, if it is, that's why I say beginning dementia, beginning, you know, whatever, until they can put it in layman's terms with the granddaughters, because I could follow a little bit about what the doctor was saying, but to write it down in layman's terms, I don't want to write it down from my perspective because
sure.
I don't remember exactly the words, you know, but the report is
sure.
there. So they have that. I was able to find
right.
that when I was, it's a mess
well,
in there. And that's what I started out doing was finding
right.
papers for them. But now the
no.
other girl is there. So, yeah.
Right. Well, if it is Alzheimer's, there are some physicians that are have coined a term type 3 diabetes. You know, we've got type 1, people are born with type 2, and then there's type 3 diabetes that I don't know that it's officially accepted or not at this point, but basically the alternative term for Alzheimer's for some physicians has become type 3 diabetes. And what they found is that with type 3 diabetes, perhaps with all Alzheimer's, there is not insulin in the brain. And in order to get sugar, you know, the fuel that the brain cell uses to function is sugar. And you have to have insulin to take the sugar into the cell. And if there's no insulin, then sugar's not getting into the cell and the brain cell dysfunctions. Well, they found there's a powder called MCT oil powder, which you can buy very inexpensively at, you know, probably any health food store, or you can buy it on Amazon. It's relatively cheap, and we've seen a significant difference in Jeannie's dad, who had an Alzheimer's diagnosis, since he started using it. And basically what happens is the MCT powder is an oil, the fat, the brain, there's a lot of fat in the brain, and I think sometimes what they call them fatheads. But what they found is that when people are taking this MCT oil on a regular basis, the brain can use that as fuel without insulin. So it burns it directly. Doesn't need the insulin to take it in and make the brain cell function. And so we've seen a pretty significant difference. I mean, Jeannie's dad was, and we don't know how much was the COVID that he had and such, but we definitely noticed a difference. And he's, you know, he's been on the MCT oil now for several months, And when we were there yesterday, or Jeannie was there yesterday and we were there the day before, he's quite cognizant and quite involved in the conversation, and quite chipper, and actually playing, you know, playing and joking, and, you know, a pretty high level of comprehension. And for a long time, we just didn't have any of that. Now, I can't say 100% that it was that, but it was about the time we started giving him the MCT oil that we noticed that difference. So coconut oil, you know, unrefined organic coconut oil can do the same thing.
Yeah, I had
so that might
coconut
be a cheap
thing.
Yeah, it might be a cheap thing to suggest that she start to give her mom on a regular daily basis. You know, I mean, a 2-pound, you know, container is about $30. So a 2-pound container lasts for a while. It might be something to at least try. You know, you go through a container of it and see if there's a difference. It's relatively cheap.
You're saying MCT, T like Tom?
M as in Michael. C as in cat,
right.
T as in Tom. MCT powder, oil powder. Yeah.
Oil powder.
If you'd like, I'll go ahead and send you a link to it on text. You get text on this phone, right?
I remember here in Florida, there was a doctor just over here, I think in Citrus County, that did this coconut oil with her husband, and she showed...
Right.
I haven't been able to find the papers yet. She showed him drawing a clock before, you know, she started that protocol, and then she showed him drawing a picture of a clock after that, you know.
Yep.
And it was like night and day.
Night and day, yes.
I can't remember how long it was, you know, over what period of time, but you don't ever hear of it.
Yeah, well, there's no money in it. There's no money in it.
Okay.
So.
I know.
And Jeannie, I'm sending you a link.
Okay, all right. I think I felt it come through my phone. What was the other question? And I think you told me that the other day, and I my brain cells are firing a little slower. So as you started to say that,
okay.
That's what we're talking about.
Cool. Well, it's worth, you know, what, 30? I just sent you the link. It's 2 pounds for $33. You know, it's pretty cheap.
And
Jeannie, I just sent you an email with a link to it, too. So you can put it in the notes.
Okay. And Dad's is actually Parkinson's, dementia, not Alzheimer's, but they're very much the same.
Right.
Right. That's what my mom had, was the dementia, Parkinson's. But that was, you know, just in the last, you know, and she was in the 90s, 98. And so that was just starting. But that was what the neurologist said. The only thing he said to me, when I took her in and they did the scan and stuff right there in their office, was, quit reasoning. I mean, when I shared what was going on and how I was, you know, how she was acting and talking and I was talking, and that was the only thing he told me, just quit reasoning. That was it. And I go, okay, so that's coming back to me, and that's what made me think of all these questions about the whole reasoning thing. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, the brain's compromised.
All right, thank you.
All right, young lady. Well, any other thoughts for you today?
No, thank you so much. Nothing.
All right. Well, holding the space for a quick healing and getting through and reinforcing your immunity to COVID and holding you in our hearts. Blessings.
Yep. Thanks.
All right. And Miss Jeannie, you've got another hand up.
Well, it actually went back down, and I didn't catch which number it was. So if you're still on the switchboard and you still have a question, still want to talk, press 1 again.
Let's say hello. How can we support you? What's on your mind? And if that other hand isn't going up, I have a poem I'd like to read.
Okay. It's not, so go for it.
Okay. Well, I come across this yesterday, and it was written, it is identified only as written by someone named Mama B, so I don't know exactly who wrote it, but it seemed like Oh, pardon me. Wait a minute. Here it is. Oh. Actually, I just see in another part of the poem is an attribution to Rosemary Traumer. So thank you, Rosemary, for this. And it just, for me, it struck a note of being in a space of compassion for people who are in pain and aberrant behavior. And, you know, if you look at the whole Western so-called Christianity, the focal point in its origins was about how to restore oneself as functioning as love. Unfortunately, a lot of fear-based dogma and doctrine have stepped into it. And so now that kind of oftentimes becomes kind of a background conversation, and hostility and rage and threats from preachers to people who do things they don't agree with, those sorts of things become quite common. It's like, what happened to the love? And it's interesting that the Buddhist tradition looks to bringing forward, at least as I perceive it, you know, when you realize that the created essence of a human being is love, if you can bring love into activity, if you can get it through the mind's programming and get active love to show up in the mind, to become the fuel for the mind, everything in someone's life changes. Well, the Buddhist tradition takes a different path, and there's a different aspect of being, of that created essence, that is called compassion. And so the Buddhist trek is to develop compassion, and I see them as complementary and parallel paths. Compassion is another aspect of the state of our created essence, love. Love is compassion as well. And so there's a different perspective there, and this woman's poem just struck me as very powerful at tapping into that state of compassion. So she writes, the title of it is Watching My Friend Pretend Her Heart Is Not Breaking. I kind of see it as the weight of grief. On Earth, just a teaspoon of a neutron star would weigh 6 billion tons. At least that's according to the world of physics. 6 billion tons equals the collective weight of every animal on Earth. Now, I'm not sure who figured out either of those numbers, but that's where she starts with this. So 6 billion tons equals the collective weight of every animal on Earth, including the insects, times three. So if we took all of the animals on Earth, all the insects on Earth, tripled their weight, we'd have the weight of, according to physicists, one teaspoon of a neutron star. 6 billion tons sounds impossible until I consider how it is to swallow grief. Just a teaspoon, and one might as well have consumed a neutron star. How dense it is. How it carries inside it the memory of collapse. How difficult it is to move then. How impossible to believe that anything could lift that weight. There are many reasons to treat each other with great tenderness. One is the sheer miracle that we are here together on planet Earth, surrounded by dying stars. One is that we cannot see what anyone else has swallowed. Kindness, compassion, empathy, and understanding, that of our shared humanness, shall propel us forward. Acceptance of our differences is essential to humanity's progress together, and binds us into an invincible force of unity. Drawing us toward our divine destiny of being one. And You know, the other day I spoke about Einstein's idea that if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. And I just see this poem as utilizing compassion and understanding of others as a way to disappear that optical delusion that we are separate and to recognize that we are all connected, that we are all, in fact, part of one structure. You know, in the same way that there are trillions of individual cells, they are individuated, but they're not separated in one so-called body. So if you look back, and there was a concept in the ancient scriptures, it was called the mystical body of Christ. It seemed a mystery because there wasn't that understanding of how a single human form was made up of trillions of cells. But now that we understand that, we can see that each of us is part of one single energy field, one single expression, and each with our own unique and individual parts in it. And when our expression goes off base, when we forget who we are, when we forget why we're here, we can get off track with living as a space of compassion, with living as a space of love. Now, lest you mistake it for, that doesn't mean that you have to lay down and let somebody stomp on your face if there's somebody around you that's playing the rage game. There's no requirement for that. One can still be held accountable, and held accountable out of a space of compassion, out of a space of concern, and accountable might not be pretty. You know, somebody approaches you and says, hey, I have a way we can make $1 million. I just got an inside track on a bank that's going to have $1 million sitting in a place where we can go steal it tomorrow. Let's go. And you offer, thank you very much, but that's not my path. I'm not interested in that. And I would suggest you don't do it either. And then out of that space of compassion and concern for the society in general and an orderly society, it might be my job in that situation to pick up the phone and call the police and inform them that this robbery is about to take place. That would be what love would look like. You know, the number of people damaged by the theft of that $1 million for the benefit of one person is a thief. I can have compassion for that person, but it doesn't mean I need to go along with their insanity. It doesn't mean I need to support it. It doesn't mean that, you know, and I don't know what that person's path is. Maybe the reason that they're, you know, at an unconscious level that they're ready to do a major theft like that is because they need 20 years in prison. I don't know. So accountability, the presence of love and compassion are different things. And one of the ways we can tell which one we're really doing is, what's the energy that's moving inside of us? Always, if it's hostility or fear, it's the individual themselves that has work to do. Now, you get two individuals who are in hostility or fear, and of course, each pointing the finger at the other. When one or the other is ready to step back and acknowledge what's theirs, then one can step into doing one's work and still with compassion and love point out the, at least the perceptions of what's happening, so there's room for communication to occur. So I just thought I'd share that. When I saw that, I thought it was powerful to look at that, you know, looking at the idea of when a star collapses to become a neutron star, the weight of it, according to science, and then equating that with how do we know what this person in front of us has swallowed? What kind of pain, what kind of trauma they're carrying? And can we be a space for their healing? Or in the same, they're not mutually exclusive, and or their accountability, whatever that might look like. So I thought I'd share that with you, and if you have any thoughts, if that strikes you at all, push one. Let's have a conversation. If there's anything we can support you with in the use of any of the tools that we offer, It would be awesome to hear your voice. Our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. If you dial that number, you'll be listening to the show live. And then if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel, and Jeannie will know that you want to speak to us and introduce you by your area code. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anyone in the phone queue with a hand up? Anything happening in the chat room?
No. It is all quiet. We have a few new numbers that I don't know who they belong to, and then we have a lot of their regular listeners, so it's good to see them back in. So anybody, whether you're always here with us or whether you're brand new, we'd love to hear from you. We'd like to hear which direction you would like the conversation to go. Can we answer a question? Do you have a comment?
No, the misinterpretations of especially the Aramaic understanding that's presented in the ancient Aramaic language through both the Old and the New Testament, the misinterpretations, the Greek ideas that get injected there are really quite dramatic. And I was doing some research the other day and accidentally came across a website, and it was, to me, it was just flabbergasting to imagine that anybody who could label themselves Christian could conceive of creating such a website, but somehow somebody's mind was able to do this, and the whole website was dedicated to, believe it or not, and I mean, I've just never heard of, or could, it was hard to fathom such a thing, but the whole website was dedicated to vengeance prayers. And the idea that, you know, if there's somebody who had done you wrong or that you were projecting, you'd been hurt by, that, and I mean, it was just one after another of these so-called prayers that are appealing to the Creator to get even for you and take vengeance. It was just like, oh, God, you've got to be kidding. Talk about a misinterpretation, thinking that, and of course, there is that idea, vengeance is mine. But in that context, in the Aramaic context, it wouldn't be a matter of vengeance. The human idea would be getting even or vengeance. But I can certainly hear that or imagine that the Creator, if one were attuned to the Creator's mind and filtered it through some form of hostility, they could imagine that the fact that, you know, there's this law called sowing and reaping, that if you sow something vicious and violent, then, you know, you're going to reap something vicious and violent. It's kind of, you know, an obvious energetic dynamic that's going to happen. And of course, there is only one power behind it all, moving everything. So I could imagine that someone would see that that result is vengeance and say, oh, so the Creator is doing vengeance. But no, it's simply the way the universe is set up. And, you know, you engage in energy. You know, it's been called karma. And I can assure you, I know about those things. I used to be a used karma salesman. You know, karma is that law of sowing and reaping, and that if you put an energy into the system, it's going to express. You're going to get that energy back from the system. And, of course, there's this wondrous tool, which is really a mechanism of grace, in a sense. Grace has been kept, you know, as a kind of a mystery, at least in most circles I'm aware of. It's sort of this mysterious conversation, grace kind of happens, but actually we were each born in grace. We were each given the ability to change our minds, to engage in a different energy than that which had been sown within our minds, and we were given a tool of forgiveness for removing those energetic patterns based in hostility and fear. And so one can overcome this so-called law of karma by undoing the energetic patterns, this law of sowing and reaping, by undoing the energetic patterns of that which has been sown. And whether it was sown by us or not, perhaps it was something sown in a previous generation. And you looked at that idea in the scriptures of, you know, look to, and a lot of people don't, you know, don't make me look, but a lot of people look at that ancient idea of look to the lives of the fathers, for ours is but a shadow of theirs upon the earth. And many people are simply reaping what was sown within their energy fields in previous generations. You know, and we inherited this whole genetic history. You know, psychology is doing some pretty interesting research showing that people who've been through severe trauma, that the children of those people exhibit the same energetic responses to trauma as the parent did. And so to recognize that the willingness to take this absolutely phenomenal, amazing tool of forgiveness, nothing to do with the Greek idea that I'm going to let you off the hook because there's something moving in me. That's got nothing to do with forgiveness. That's a Greek idea of pardoning. But that forgiveness is the removal of energetic patterns that never belonged. And the genius of how Yeshua instructed on how to access those energetic patterns is just beyond all, you know, comprehension in today's world. And that's why we have an app that if you go to your app store and type in the words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. And with that app, you can engage in the forgiveness process directly there, step by step. And as Jeannie said earlier, there's a link on each page in the app where if you have a question, you can just click that link and zip the question to us, and we'll answer it on the show and send you back a link to when it was answered. But you can actually engage in the – go ahead, sweetie.
We have a hand up.
Oh, awesome. Let's go for it.
All right. I think it's Miss Julie in Oregon. It's 541. You're on the air.
Hi. It is me. Hi.
Welcome, young lady.
Hi. You're going to hear something going on outside because I'll just come inside in a moment. But anyway, well, I'm not in the experience of what's been going on with me lately quite as deeply, but I wanted to report that amazing things are being learned by this human being. what I mean is that the learning opportunity is always there to practice forgiveness. So what I was focusing on and had reported is that I have been seeing behaviors in my partner for this whole relationship for like 3 or 4 years now. And of course, I'm looking at where is that inside me and what is that inside me. And I've been looking at how we resonate each other with our pet peeve aggravations. So, but what I'm really starting to see now is that I don't need to engage with it. What I'm really trying to see, or starting to see, is that, I'm sitting down now, is that there's a similar resonance, and the way the forms manifest in each of our lives is can be a multiple of possibilities. That it's not the same issue necessarily with each person. Or let me put it this way, maybe each person makes a different reality out of the resonance. And there's a resonance that stems from their own roots, our own roots, my own roots. So, okay, so having said that, and I used the word not a little bit in there, I know, but I'm working on it. So I've been able to rise above these interfering energies by seeing the truth at another level, which is that, and one higher level or next level leads to the next, but, that I get resonated with issues in my childhood of not good enough, not doing it right. Let's just put it that way for now. And he gets resonated in nobody ever listens to me or does it right enough, something like that. And so,
right.
So in order to, so it looks like different forms. Each person is having their own experience based on the reality that they're projecting onto the other. And I'm getting this to a point now that I can free myself from it by
Sweet.
Doing my work, but not just taking the whole responsibility for him too, because
right.
I tend to be a rescuer and all of that. And how that matched into some of his energy was, in his background is some narcissism, in you know, hereditarily speaking, you know, in one of his parents, maybe both. And so I've been looking in my history, well, gee, was my mom maybe somewhat narcissistic? And so I developed a behavior in response to walking on eggshells around her. Gee, that's an interesting thing to discover. And or my father, what was his form that interaction of resonance between them took, my mother and father? And so it's just so widening for me to see these things. And yes, it is a space of love through which I look. You know, it helps provide a sort of separation of these issues so that I see them clearly instead of being reactive to them. And yet I know there's a oneness, so I'm not separating out like in order to blame, you know, and deny. And my I got the words from Spirit yesterday that hear my words, all right? And then I said, well, I always hear your words. I'm always listening, but, you know, whatever. I said that. And then came the words, my words can be heard even through your denial, which was really big. And I felt comfortable with that because I can be aware of both or many tendencies of realities that I hold, and they can be removed. So it's really cool because I don't feel quite like I'm the effect of it or that my ego is so engaged and triggered that it has to defend itself. And I can be okay with, you know, whatever narcissism is as a label, knowing that it's just something to be healed in the opportunity of me and my boyfriend having a relationship, even if I can't explain it all to him. So it's bypassing that need too. Okay, I think I'm complete for now.
So my offering would be, if you remember back in the codependency, inner dependence intensive that you did, we did a section mm-hmm. on healing through relationships. And remember mm-hmm. that the attraction in relationships is often just through pure resonance. And that aspect of relationship can tend to at least have a component that is matching bags of garbage.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you might find it useful to start going back and reviewing. You know, you've got all of those videos from the intensive. You might find it useful to go back and start reviewing those again. But recognizing mm-hmm. that through resonance, you know, the number one purpose of life is to heal us and bring us into full expression. And one of the ways that happens, if we've developed a lifestyle of living in denial and dissociation, is that somebody's going to show up to kick us in the limitation, to show us what we're holding on to. And when I finally confront the truth that, oh, I'm feeling this, this must be mine, then I can begin to disassemble that. And as I disassemble or forgive that, the attraction based in matching bags of garbage tends to start to fade away, and it becomes one more based in connectedness through being and achieving that state of unity, that state of oneness. So that'd be my highest thought for you at this point.
Yeah, and you know what it is? When you were speaking, when I had said separate, it separates out, it's kind of like, I guess, like molecules, like let's say oil and water, and if you shake up the bottle or the container, you can see the separation of the oil floating through the water until it rises to the top, you know. And so there's this suspended animation of potentiality that I can see. Am I going to use this situation of matching energies to conveniently blame the other person? And I know I had that tendency growing up. There was a phrase in my family, oh, so you come out smelling like a rose, you know? And so I learned how to do that, how to make myself look good and let the other person take all the blame. And so that's, you know, something that, anyway, so it's distilling out now the factors, you know, without the judgmental energy. And so I can recognize when he may be blaming me and, you know, trying to, you know, bring out his evidential mind, you know, and tell me the long list of all the things that are wrong with me. And I just can, you know, I don't even choose any one of them to defend myself. I just listen and be there with myself also as a space of love, you know. And so what I've learned about narcissism too is that, you know, a lot of times that person who's in that resonance at the time is really trying to fuel themselves with energy, like, you know, that's sort of a strategy, unconscious, I'm sure, to get energy and get someone engaged and get somebody to, you know, be distracted or persuaded in some way. And so I don't have to do that anymore. I just said don't. But instead of doing that, which I recognize as from my childhood patterns of coping with my parents or whatever, what form it took in the times that it needed to take form, I managed a behavior in order to get along and survive with my power person. And so now I have different choices, and I just look to Spirit and Ruka to assist me. And I find that I'm doing a lot of breathing and letting go of the energy, you know, the anxiety in my body, and just staying focused on my task at hand, for example, and
right,
letting myself be motivated by myself and my own goals instead of the goals my power person's had for me to do it right, do it perfect. And by the way, do what I want, not what you want, and in that interruptive energy. So
right,
this is a miracle. It's a miracle for
nice,
me.
Nice work.
Yeah.
Here comes that it would be useful to dig out the three early memories exercise. And I know
mm-hmm.
that you've been in workshops several times where you've done that, and I don't know if you've kept mm-hmm. your paperwork, but it might be interesting to go back and find every time you've done that three early memories exercise in the Healing Through Relationships workshop. And just
mm-hmm.
remember, one of the things we've talked a lot about is developing the ability to become the thinker apart from your thought, the feeler apart from your feelings, the actor apart from your actions, to step back and observe your mind in operation. And you may find that if you've got a few of those three early memories exercises, that it will help you to put in context the healing opportunities that are coming up now for you and give you another level of support in being able to just dissolve that energy.
Okay, thank you. You said that in the nick of time. I'm going to consider it a message from Spirit because I am throwing away stuff, and I was conjuring up enough energetic behavior to dump a lot of those papers because there's so many and I need to get rid of things, right? So I've convinced myself of an outside of myself power person goal being held for me instead of those are valuable to me. They're a little chaotic. They're all over the place in many boxes, having moved many times. However, there's an order inside me that, just like you pointed to, that is coming into congruence with my true reality, and I'm just blessing and releasing and forgiving the ones that are unwanted, that are unlike love. So
cool.
I can do it in the present moment without all my past paperwork, but still refer to it like you just said.
Yeah, and again, you know, with the fact that you're heading to Spain, that's a lot of paper to carry. But I think we had this conversation, you know, a simple scanner, and you can scan those things, and you know, they're in your computer, and they take no room at all, and you've got all of that history. Yes,
Michael, technology is great, and I'll see how much time I have to do that scanning and all the music and all the stuff that I think is important to hang on to. See, that's a new skill for me.
And you could get creative. Yeah, and you could get creative. For instance, you know, maybe like kids are so great with technology. Maybe you've got a student that really is not in a position where they can afford that music lesson, but would be delighted to take music lessons in exchange for scanning those for you. Or even showing you how to, you know, I mean, you can set it in files and make it useful. So who knows? There are lots of creative ways. Some kid could benefit and would love to help scan that stuff. And, you know, there are lots of ways to bring it about. Just another thought.
Well, okay, thank you. You're right. I do have students, but I need to organize and manage it. So I'll just let Ruka guide me on that, and I'll hold them. I love those notes. I don't really want to throw them away, so, you know. So thank you.
I understand. It's valuable.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Cool.
And it isn't all that chaotic because I am a technology myself, and so I –
cool.
You know what I mean. Yeah, I've got it all archived somewhere, and I know it comes up again and again, so – however, that all of that work is an advance that I've made in life, and it's a furthering package of material to preserve or just, you know, value. You
well, the benefit,
and
I'm saying this, I'm saying this from my experience, is that when I go back to my old notes, one, I'm often shocked that I knew that way back then. And two, it now has a whole different gift to give me because I've, you know, that having been part of my past, I've built more brain cells in a given arena. And so out of that note that I wrote 35 years ago that I look at and go, I don't even remember knowing that, all of a sudden I've got a whole new insight and a whole new gift. Which can be pretty awesome.
Thank you. You're right.
Awesome.
Yes. Thank you.
All right.
All right.
We're down to the last minute.
Okay.
So we'll hold space that the next level of your work happens and that your preparation and motion toward your move to Spain is easy and gently done. And hold you in our heart.
Yes, thank you.
All right, blessings. Take care.
Okay.
Good breath. All right, everybody, thanks for being with us. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. And blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org.